It is now time, ladies and gentlemen, for our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. We are in African History Month. Some folks call it Black History Month. We're also observing Reggae Month. 403 years after the first enslaved African arrived on these shores, whether it's the West Indies or the United States. Think about the topic this morning, ladies and gentlemen. Emancipated, independent, with a colonial education. Let me repeat. Emancipated, independent, with a colonial education. Our very special guest has arrived, Anthony Turner. And as always, introduce the guests, please.
Well, Rascam, a special guest on Mic Check this morning for Black History and for Reggae History Month. Her name is Professor Rosalia Hamilton, and she is the CEO of the Lasco Chin Foundation. And Professor Hamilton was actually vice president at the University of Technology in Jamaica from 2008 to 2018. And she established and led the MSME Alliance, which is a network of small business organizations. And she did this for 10 years. She also established the Institute of Law and Economics. And she worked as a consultant and public educator on trade, governance, gender, and other areas of economic and social development. She has taught at the graduate and undergraduate levels in Jamaica and here in the U.S. And she was special advisor and trade policy consultant in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Foreign Trade, and served as chief advisor to the Prime Minister of Jamaica from 2006 to 2007. She's currently a board director for Lasco Manufacturing Limited and the National Integrity Action, which is a corruption watchdog organization. Mm-hmm. And during the period from February 2020 to June 2021, more than 1.5 million seeds were planted across the Caribbean. And she was, of course, chair of the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance, contributing to mitigating the impact of climate change and fostering sustained development by leading a Caribbean tree planting project in 22 Caribbean countries. So we, of course, welcome Professor Hamilton to Cruising Radio this
As we welcome Professor Rosalie Hamilton to Grooving Radio this Saturday morning. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, the conversation is emancipated, independent, with a colonial education system. And there's a little noise, I think, in the professor's background that we do hope that we can rid of this morning. And as I welcome Professor, good morning, Professor Hamilton. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing very well. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome, Professor. You know, as always, I like to ask my guests, especially when they're in warm, sunny Jamaica, how is Jamaica this morning?
Nice and sunny and warm.
Okay.
Cool.
Definitely. Thank you so much for that. Professor, this is where we're going to start. And Anthony Turner, who's our writer, is also a part of the conversation.
Good morning, Professor.
Morning.
Yes.
How you doing?
Yeah, man, everything blessed. I hear the sunshine in your voice this morning. It's coming over warm.
No, Professor, this is where we're going to start. The conversation, emancipated, independent, with a colonial education. Is it time to reform education in Jamaica? That will be my first question for you, Professor.
Long time. We should have done this long time. Mm-hmm. It is sad that, you know, we're talking about 60 years of independence and we're still having this conversation about the need to decolonize our education system and to think again about the appropriateness of the system of education that we have to need to address the challenges that we have today. So, yes, quick. Easy answer there, yeah. Absolutely, we should have done this long time.
You know, a recent report came out, and I'm sure you may have seen the report that came out from the Honorable Professor Orlando Patterson, OM. Have you seen that report, Professor?
Yes, I have.
Let's just look at what you took a look at it, huh? Correct?
Yes.
Okay. So when you look at Professor's Professor Patterson's report. What comes to mind, Professor Hamilton?
Well, let me say this. It's a very comprehensive report, and I'll urge the listeners to read it. It is long.
Mm-hmm.
The executive summary gives you a good feel for what's in the document,
mm-hmm.
and there are some good points raised. I certainly highlight some of the issues having to do with the pedagogical challenges that we have,
mm-hmm.
The pedagogical challenges, and the need to move away from a very teacher-centric approach to education and learning,
mm-hmm.
To what I would consider a more child-centric, student-centric approach,
mm-hmm.
where our students become the center of the teaching and learning process and is willing to and able to learn by doing. And the report talks about a collective approach to teaching and learning, which involves not just the teachers and the students, but importantly the community and parents, and you know, it takes a village, mm-hmm. type of idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you have ideas like that that's there. But I just, my two quick comments, because you know there's not enough time to do justice to a comprehensive critique of the report, but I would say that what I thought was missing was a pervasive attempt to decolonize the system of education in Jamaica. And what I mean by that is how we look at the education system as an having its roots in a colonial process in which the very structures of education was established to perpetuate the colonial and the post-colonial system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think locating that, and let me say that the report starts by recognizing there are two major challenges Jamaica face. One is the one we know right now, which is the COVID challenge, and I certainly add the climate change challenge.
Right.
But it also correctly points to the long history of that colonial process and the need to overcome the economic and social consequences of that history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Having placed it there, I thought the report should have, throughout the entire document, should have, these issues should have permeated the document.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been there in every single chapter of conversation, whether it's the governance structure of the system,
mm-hmm.
curriculum, technology, all of that. It should be. So that was my one big takeaway. The other big takeaway is a clarification of the social and economic challenges that we face,
right.
and therefore how the education system must position itself to facilitate the achievement of these challenges. So those are my two big takeaways, but I do think that the report is quite comprehensive and has some excellent perspectives and issues that we have to pay attention to.
Well said, Professor Hamilton. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to follow this conversation this morning, because when we take it back, Anthony, to the 1800s, whether it was 1834, 1837, we talk about emancipation. We talk about independence in 1962. And you talk about the disadvantage that many Jamaicans and West Indian Islands face, whether they were French or Spanish or the Roman Catholic faith. You look at the disadvantage that they face, Professor, and you look at our education system, which is a colonial education system. My next question, before I go to Anthony's question, is what are some of the major pitfalls of the current education system, educational system in Jamaica, Professor Hamilton?
Well, you know, I'd like to frame it this way. I think the big picture to look at is the concept of education and the role of education.
Anthony, we just lost the professor. Continue, Anthony. Let me get the professor back on.
Yeah, boy, this discussion today is very timely. And one of the things that I really wanted to ask the professor when she comes back, I wanted to kind of take it to contemporary life, especially in Jamaica, and the whole educational system. I mean, before, I know women, a woman's place is in the home, and we've seen a change in the guys in that regard, where a lot more women are going out in the workplace, having professional careers. I'm talking at the University of the West Indies. I think we have probably more female students pursuing tertiary education. And there has been some degradation of the family life and the family structure. So I just want to hear the professor's take on all of this and how they're changing the whole, you know, more females attaining education and going for advanced degrees.
Yeah.
Impacting the family.
All right, especially higher education. Save the thoughts, Anthony. We got the professor back on. Welcome back, professor. You can continue.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not sure what happened there.
Okay, go ahead.
So my point was really to the two concepts of education. Now, I think if we have the view that a kind of traditionalist view of education as acquiring and mastering existing knowledge, to be able to function in the world that we're in. So whether it's the colonial world or the post-colonial world, you really try to master existing knowledge. And so the system as it's set, the status quo, becomes normalized. Mm-hmm. And so you become the brightest and you try to attain PhDs and so on. Many of us grew up with that conception of education. You go to the highest levels and you can rote learn your way and become excellent in this system. Or we can have, I think, a more modern, liberal type of interpretation of education and the system of learning, where we invent and create knowledge. Mm-hmm. So knowledge is not just there to learn, but education and knowledge is an active process where you engage the world in an active way, you solve problems, and it's through the problem solving that you acquire knowledge and you learn. Two different conceptions.
Right.
And I think it's that clash that we see in contention today, because there are some who adhere to that idea. And let me just say, when you train people out of a system that sees education in the former way, then you end up today in the way we have, where we have a global pandemic.
Right.
And our preoccupation is to get access to solutions created by others, because that's the way to solve the problem, as opposed to putting your own systems in place to invent your own solutions to address your own circumstances. Two different approaches.
Definitely.
And you could see that, for example, other countries in the world have done that. There was the Europeans immediately went about their business to create vaccines, etc. The Chinese did it, other people. In fact, in the Caribbean, the Cubans did it.
Right.
But we and others like us have been satisfied with simply depending on the world for answers. And when you look closely at the core approaches we have to, for example, our economic strategies, we're looking to others.
Mm-hmm.
And we're missing the fact that inherent in our society are the clues and the answers to our problems.
Mm.
And it resides in our people.
Mm-hmm.
So our capacity to create the best music in the world is missed. Our capacity to become the fastest men and women to the world is missed.
Mm-hmm.
We still continue to look outside ourselves.
Wow, well said. Our very special guest this morning, ladies and gentlemen, is Professor Rosalie Hamilton. The conversation from Emancipated Independence with a Colonial Education System. And before you ask the question, Anthony, just think about that. Our education system and probably is still based out of the whole Oxford-Cambridge system, coming straight from the slave masters. Huh? Your question, Anthony Turner.
Absolutely. Yes, so I had a question that I was asking when you had drop off, but I'll just reserve that question for a minute because you had spoke about music and all of that, and I wanted to take it back to that song that Bob Marley did where he spoke about emancipate yourself from mental slavery, you know, and freeing our minds. And I thought about it, something that Rasklem and I have discussed on this very program about going to school, especially for us in the 70s and 80s, and we've been told about Christopher Columbus discovered the New World and discovered Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And one of the first person that has ever spoken about Christopher Columbus is a damn blasted liar was Burning Spear, a musician who probably had a secondary education. So how do we emancipate ourselves, and especially as Rasklin talk about that knowledge from that's coming from Oxford and the English, and they have indoctrinated us. How do we emancipate ourselves?
It's an excellent question, and I think it must start with what exactly do we mean by mental slavery?
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to go deep there, because I think when we begin to understand the psychological impact that that history of slavery and colonization has created, we begin to see the depth and the power of that statement. And we could look at the life's work of people like Freddie Hicklin. Mm-hmm. Professor Hicklin spent a lot of time looking at this question of the psychological impact of this process. And he roots it in an understanding of what happened at the whole, at the start. Because when you come to a country and you rape and you plunder, mm-hmm. and you exploit in the way Christopher Columbus and others have done, others before him and after him did,
mm-hmm.
then what you do is start by trying to normalize what essentially is an abnormal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's not normal in the human psyche and behavior to be exploitative and to be to create the kinds of atrocities that we've seen. So you subjugate a people, and you have them accept this form of humiliation, disrespect, inferiority as normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so this internalization of that experience as normalized is the beginning of a psychological trauma that we have to come to grips with.
Mm.
And let me say this. It's not just the psychological impact of the oppressed people, but also of the oppressors.
Yes.
The idea, something I wrote about recently, the idea of white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You have.
Anthony, we have lost the professor again. Something. Okay,
the
so
argument mm-hmm. is just too powerful for us. This conversation,
continue.
This one, as you try to get the professor back, is a serious conversation that we must have, and we must engage some of our intelligent and articulate women and men to discuss, because they what we have experienced from slavery and coming up since those years to contemporary life is just a lot. And you know, it's really something that this conversation is really good, and I think the professor is really nailing some of the points that she's making and helping us to kind of understand how we can move forward, you know. So we have to take two steps backward before I guess we can move forward to deal with this issue. But I guess when she comes back for the next in the next hour, I wanted to still raise the question about education and the family life, and you know how we move forward with having both parents, both, you know, the male and the female working, on how it has impacted family life, the kids not, you know, being mm-hmm. home mm-hmm. by themselves and all right. of that. So a lot.
Yeah, the professor is back. And pick up where you left off, professor. Sorry about that again.
I'm not sure where you heard that. I didn't.
You're talking about, I think you were talking about the privilege and you were talking yes. about accepting. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. So I was kind of describing a kind of duality,
mm-hmm.
a kind of dual psychological legacy that we're describing, that I see as this mental slavery, that
mm-hmm.
that a mindset both on the part of the colonized and the colonizer,
mm-hmm.
right, that perpetuates the norms and the institutions and values
mm-hmm.
that were necessary
to perpetuate that system. I think that's what we have to confront.
Right.
But I also want to say that, you know, our legacy and our inheritance is not only mental slavery mindset, but what I consider to be a mental resistance mindset. And that's the mindset that we inherited from people like Marcus Garvey,
right,
and all of these freedom fighters. And, you know, that's the mindset of a Bob Marley and a Peter Tosh and so on, who understood in the search for themselves and in understanding who they are, that they are human beings with dignity.
Right.
And we come from a proud past. And therefore, that kind of proactive approach to create a society that respects who you are, that normalizes our greatness, our goodness, is what we need to do. And I think that's the way I see this mental slavery. It's one side of the coin. It has two sides.
Right.
And it's the side of the mental resistance that I think we need to embrace more so than getting into an obsession only with the mental state.
Hey, you know, Professor, I can also see how easy it was for us as Jamaicans to actually accept and normalize that kind of behavior, you know, and accept the system that was pushed upon us. Because think about when you go back to independent then, August 6, 1962, and you look at Jamaica and you wonder how many Jamaicans, what percentage of Jamaica was educated enough to understand. Some would say it was above 80% of Jamaica that was in the illiteracy column. And you look at, and when you mention the folks who were seated at the table, signing off on this whole deal, and no money was given. To my knowledge, there's a radio on somewhere in the background, and no money was given to Jamaica, the government of Jamaica at the time, to actually educate those who were uneducated. So it was very easy, in a sense, for them to kind of accept what was just given unto them. Which brings to me this question. What are some of the preliminary steps that should be taken to create a system which will seek to arrest the current education deficit in Jamaica?
Oh boy, let me just make a quick comment on that past, because, you know, the literacy rate is something that we're still grappling with. And it's a basic way to start. I mean, at Independence, there was a literacy survey that was done during that era, I think it was 64, and it found that about nearly 50%, 43% of the population, adult population, was literate. And we have, although we had a good early childhood elementary school system for many, many years, the quality of the education is a challenge. And so that's something that the report speaks to, that although we may have high rates of employment, enrollment at all levels, you know, primary, secondary, etc., the quality is an issue. And so today we have students after 6 years of primary schooling, you know, failing exams. I mean, more than 50% fail at maths. You know, nearly 50, about 45 to 50% fail at English language. And only, this is very sad, only 28% pass 5 or more subjects with English and maths. So I think to get your question, if we look back at where we're coming from, we start with a huge deficit in the independent era. I think we have to look at two issues. The content of our education system, that means we have to do some basic things to be able to survive in the modern world. So, you know, making sure that we pass these exams and achieve the requirements we need to function in society. But beyond that, of course, the point I raised earlier about the need to develop the kinds of skills and mindset to recreate a society and to transform what we have to be able to enable us to reassert ourselves in the world on terms that are beneficial to us. So the content is one thing, structures is another.
Mm. Anthony?
Yeah, one quick thing I wanted to mention, because as somebody who benefited from an education in Jamaica and, you know, coming here and doing tertiary education and having kids in the American school system, I still think there's something great about the education system in Jamaica, because you can have a child who is in a situation with a family that has no formal education, but they can still go to school in Jamaica and become lawyers and doctors. Here, if you're in a situation, the schools here basically not preparing the kids for, you know, if you don't have a parent who really is there pushing the child and encouraging them and do what it is. In a lot of cases here, they'll be lost. And we're talking about a first world country as opposed to a third world country in Jamaica. So, I don't know, can you speak a little bit about that?
The both, yeah, you're making a good observation. And I can quickly say the way to understand the education system in Jamaica is to understand that we have essentially an apartheid system.
Mm-hmm.
That we have a set of schools that are first class,
mm-hmm.
that are better than perhaps the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are lucky to go to one of those, as I was,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to be properly educated,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to perform well and better than your peers when you go to the West.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience.
Mm-hmm.
But if you happen to be among the majority mm-hmm. of students in Jamaica that have gone to the other schools, what we mm-hmm. call the non-traditional schools,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then you have a problem.
A major problem.
Among,
mm-hmm.
Yes, major problem. You're going to be among that 28%.
Yes.
Having passed only, you know, five
or
exams or more. And in fact, you're unlikely to be among those. That's really a percentage that captures those who go to the traditional schools.
Right. Professor, I want you to hold your thoughts. Hold your thoughts, Professor. The computers are going to take over. We're going to pick up exactly right here when we come back after the break. Because, Anthony, I wouldn't use the word great. I would use the word good. And the professor hit the nail on the head in terms of traditional and non-traditional school. Hold your thoughts, Professor. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. This is Groovin' Radio. Thank you so much, Mr. Albarozzi. Yes, the fire cannot be cooled and the fire won't be tame. You're listening to Groovin' Radio and my name is Ras Clem. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. Our very special guest this morning is Professor Rosalie Hamilton. Ladies and gentlemen, the conversation this morning, emancipated, independent with a colonial education. The time has come. The time has come and passed for the education system in Jamaica to be reformed. So I hope you're in the classroom this morning and you're full join the Groovin' Radio experience. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Anthony.
Yeah.
And before we took the break, ladies and gentlemen, we were at a point where Anthony pointed out the education system in Jamaica and some of the good that's within it. But the professor actually counteracted with something that's, again, need to be repeated in terms of when you look at traditional schools. And some of those traditional schools, if not all of them, were private institutions, Professor. They were private,
yeah,
where you had to spend your money to get to it. So when we started the conversation, I spoke about the fact that look who had access to education for many, many years and continue to enjoy that access to education. That's where we're going to pick up, Professor. Continue.
Right. In fact, just to note that, you know, a lot of these private schools were boarding schools,
mm-hmm.
you know, when back in 1653, when you had that big shift in the education system where we had our first minister of education and social
mm-hmm.
Welfare, you had moving from the colonial director of education the only 5% of the population receiving secondary education, mm-hmm. and they were all boarding schools. So mm-hmm. and the churches mm-hmm. played an important role there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had the idea of traditional schools rooted in that old colonial approach to education. And they, again, ensured that students were taught, were exposed to the best. So that's the duality I was talking about, that mm-hmm. you'd one conception, and the conception they inherited is the idea that you understand the status quo very well.
Mm-hmm.
You understand the existing knowledge. You weren't encouraged to create knowledge. You were encouraged to repeat existing knowledge and not question too much. I went to Immaculate Conception High School,
mm-hmm.
and I remember actively trying to question some of the things, and you were told to just accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just, mm-hmm. that was it. You were literally taught mm-hmm. not to question, certainly not your teacher, who was the font of all knowledge,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. Was the system is rooted that way. So then you become the best among, in terms of the existing levels of knowledge and information in the world. If you continue along that path,
mm-hmm.
you get into a different realm when you begin to question, challenge, create,
mm-hmm.
innovate ideas and knowledge.
You know, and Anthony, I hope you remember when I spoke about earlier on in the first section of this first segment of this interview, in terms of the prevalence that the French and the Spanish and the Roman Catholics, you could talk about even some of the English Anglicans in Jamaica really had in terms of access to education. This is no joke. And again, ladies and gentlemen, the time has come. The time has come for a reform in the education system in Jamaica. As Jamaica approaches its 60th year of that agreement with Great Britain, August 6, 1962. Mm-hmm. I call it the agreement because I'm not 100% sure how independent are we. Know that this report came out, Professor Hamilton. Know that Professor Patterson report came out. Are you aware of the next step? No. That this report has been completed. It's been sitting on the Prime Minister's desk. Are you aware of what's the next step going to be?
My understanding is generally implementation. That's my understanding. I have encouraged, however, that there be fulsome discussions about the report across the country. In fact, the very recommendation of the report that the education process must be seen as a collaborative process. If taken, if that perspective is adopted, mm-hmm. then it is my hope that the report can be even further refined with the collective engagement of all of us,
mm-hmm.
that we all can begin to have our voices heard in shaping an education system that we're all proud of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my hope. And in fact, I am aware of initiatives myself, involved in initiatives where we will try to organize our own efforts to engage a discussion about the report.
Mm. Mm. Why are some folks finding it so hard, Professor, to have these conversations? Because certain times when you use certain terms, persons like myself use certain terms and said it was prevalent in Jamaica at a time. Like I will talk and I will say, well, there was once white supremacy in Jamaica, you know. There's folks who would look at me like, are you crazy? But if you look at who ruled us for many years, why wouldn't there be white supremacy in Jamaica? Because you look at the plain education system and who had access to it. They never looked like you and I, Professor. They weren't dark-skinned people. They weren't. And I also talk about democracy in peril in Jamaica. When I look at how, and I don't want to use the word common, let's say a Jamaican who don't have a lot. When I look at how those Jamaicans are treated compared to the ones who have it, there is a democracy problem in Jamaica, and it's across the board, even in our education system. So now it brings to me now, when we look at what's crippling Jamaica today, crime and violence, and we look at how it's been dealt with, is there any evidence? Is there any evidence or any correlation between education and what's happening with crime and violence in Jamaica, Professor Hamilton?
Of course. I think it's quite obvious. In fact, I've been trying to put my hands on a report that the police did a few years ago. But our commissioner of police in a press conference a few years ago, could have been last year actually, made reference to that study that found it was a study of the population in the prison system, and it found that about 80% of the inmates came from about 20 schools in the country. And these schools, when you look at most of them, in fact only one traditional school was part of the list, they were all non-traditional schools, and schools that have the traditional characteristic of not producing smoking. And so that's one evidence that you've seen right there. But if you look carefully at what happens, if these kids come out of school, they're not prepared for jobs because they're not well trained, and their capacity to even run businesses that can be viable are challenged. I do a lot of work in that space, so I see it all the time. We try to train people to become entrepreneurs and so on, but the very basic skills, reading and writing skills, are challenged. Is a challenge. So they can't cope. And the easiest thing to cope, especially when you come from communities in which crime is all around you, the easiest thing to do is to become a part of that culture. And especially when that culture of crime produces far more than you can earn at, you know, going into any job at the base. So people are lured into the life of crime, actually, I should say, even before they leave the school system, because these youngsters are recruited into gangs before they leave school. In fact, some of the gangs exist in the schools.
Wow.
And there was at least one case I heard about where the community gang was in the school. And he was the gang leader. He was the don of the community. And he was a school. He was a student in school.
Wow. What a direct connection.
It's very clear that it's the capacity now to make your way in the world that you need an education to anchor the choices you make, the way you make these choices and so on. And if you're badly educated, you do not have education that, for example, makes you proud of who you are, and you have self-content, then you do the kinds of things to yourself and others because you place no value on your own life or on your life of others.
Emancipated, independent with a colonial education. So now it brings me again to where when we see, and it's common knowledge, folks, that many Jamaicans who finish school in Jamaica and come here, there seems to be at an advantage compared to the American students, but that's a very small number now. When you look at the numbers, in Jamaica, which are very troubling when it comes to those who are going on to higher education, and we find more women, as Anthony mentioned earlier on, are going on to tertiary education in Jamaica. How can we now try and rectify that part of it? Professor, because we find that the numbers have widened between girls and boys in Jamaica graduating high schools with a lot of subjects and going on to higher education. How can we close those numbers? What would be your suggestion?
Well, let me say that I'm actively supporting men who understand this problem and are actively engaging our boys. There's a gender problem with respect to our boys being in the education system and making it over those troubling teenage years and into adulthood. And so I think some specific interventions are required. The same way there were explicit strategic interventions to assist women to overcome the gender gap. The gender gap still persists in many ways. That's another conversation. But with respect to women, it's evident in pay, etc. But with respect, and that's another dichotomy, I want to raise that, because here you are describing an education system that's in favor in women, because we see the numbers there in terms of women versus boys coming out of the schooling system. Yet we have a system in which women continue to get to earn less than men across most sectors of the society. But to come back to the issue of the men, just like the way women, there are lots of gender interventions that supported women and helped women to overcome the historical challenges. Similarly, we have to do the same for men. And I think the men are stepping up to the plate. I am aware of several interventions. I can mention a few because I give them a lot of support. Men of God Against Crime and Violence, doing excellent work. Jason Downer and others are doing excellent work in the schools, working with young boys. And there are many other initiatives where, you know, men have stepped up to the plate and say, yes, we have to do more to help our men. And I think those kinds of interventions will make a difference over time.
Anthony, you have a question before we wrap?
Yeah, I wanted to just go back to that point I'd raised when we had lost the professor about the whole family structure and degradation of the family unit. I mean, it's clearly we have more educated men and more educated women pursuing careers. The traditional family unit where the mother or woman would stay home and take care of the child and do all the nurturing, and the father would go out and be the breadwinner. We've seen a change in that. And there's been some impact on the family unit. Can you speak to that particular issue and how will we find a sweet spot that it benefits everybody?
Oh boy, you know, the family is very complex, and there's so many issues there. But let me just say quickly, a lot of our kids are being raised by single mothers, and there's lots of evidence to suggest that spells signs of troubles, because the engagement, a lot of these men end up in criminality, not because they're being brought up by single mothers, important to make that point, but single mothers with very different help. And this is the work of Herbert Gale and so on, have brought that out, that these women who don't have much help, they're on their own, and it's just very difficult. The men, the boys, and so on, very complex psychological issues, etc. So there's an important intervention that we need to support single mothers raising kids, especially boys. We have to find a way to support them. The role of the extended family in the child's upbringing continues to be important, especially, as you are well aware, a lot of young parents, mothers in particular, would leave the kids behind with a grandmother or a grandparent, and that also creates challenges. And some of these grandparents and stuff need support. So I think that, and then of course, importantly, the gender interventions that help to support and strengthen the role of women who, you know, try to mother and father their kids, as well as men. Because we're increasingly seeing the men who are trying to mother and father their kids, and there are challenges for the men in growing up young girls, and they're facing challenges, similarly the challenges of young women trying to raise boys. And so it's a complex set of issues. We have to find a way to intervene, and to intervene in a way that can strengthen the family and strengthen the capacity of these kids to really navigate the space.
Inside the classroom with Professor Rosalie Hamilton, former vice president at the University of Technology, ladies and gentlemen, as we celebrate African History Month, Black History Month, the time has come. The time has come, ladies and gentlemen, because when we talk about from emancipation to independence, we're still having a colonial education system in Jamaica and parts of the Caribbean that it must be reformed. Why is this challenge such a challenge, Professor Hamilton? Why is it such a challenge for the system that we have today to reform themselves and change the system to a friendlier system, walk away from the monarchy? Why is it so tough?
I come back to some of the psychological challenges that we face, because the system is truly ingrained. And again, there's two sets of it. If you look at the history of people who've developed this mental resistance and they've resisted the system, it's not been an easy struggle. And we see it, we still see it today. There are consequences you face for challenging the system. You don't get the jobs, you don't get these positions and accolades, unless you really become, you know, Marcus Garvey, and, you know, he got the accolades after his death. The same is true for Bob Marley and so on. We all recognize that work after, but during your lifetime, it's a lifetime of struggle. And your friends sometimes ignore you and they don't really want to go so far with you. They may agree with you in private, but they don't want... Those are real choices that people make. It's very obvious to me that most of us, especially those of us who've got at least tertiary education, understand that the system is not set up and not configured to support and transform the lives of the majority of people in Jamaica. I think that's well known and understood. It's the choices that we all make that really makes a difference. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of veranda talk. Every time something happens in the media, you see it a lot on social media, and we're all saying a lot on social media, but we're doing very little to take steps to systematically transform the system. In fact, in preparing for this, I had a conversation with someone in the teachers' college, and I said, to what extent is this the kind of debate that's taking place in the teachers' college? And I'm told very little. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not happening. Franz Fanon's work, Pedagogy of the Press and so on, these kinds of works, Paul Freire and so on, these scholars that have laid the foundation for the understanding of the colonial process, especially around education, they're not necessarily taught in these schools. So teachers come into the classroom perpetuating what they have learned. So we have to ask ourselves, who are these people in these systems that are doing the same things and are not questioning? Well, if they've come out of our education system, and they typically have, and they're taught to just understand the status quo and to do that well and not to question the system as it is established and structured, then we see the perpetuation of these institutions, and we don't see the kinds of changes that we want to see. You have to have that mindset. You have to have the self-confidence. You have to be bold. And all of this comes out of a period of training. I didn't get to who I am today overnight. I went to a traditional school. It took many years of self-learning and reorientating my mind to get to this point where I have the confidence to speak out and say, no, we need to do things differently and to challenge the status quo. And not many of us are prepared and able to do it.
Well, I guess I was born a rebel, because it is said that success don't come overnight, but have been challenging the system for a very long time. And yes,
absolutely.
And we must have these conversations, because folks, education from emancipation to independence, we must question it. We must question the system that we currently live under. And those, well said, Professor, those who have challenged and questioned the system, look at how other Jamaicans look at them. The Jamaicans didn't really like Garvey. And as we seek to get 100,000 signatures here in the United States and around the world to exonerate the name of Marcus Mosiah Garvey here in America, we're having a difficult time having Jamaicans just trying to log on to justiceforgarvey.org. And we want them to log on. This is your first visit here, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. It's been a pleasure. It's not going to be your last visit. It's not going to be your last visit. We will call on you again, Professor, because I'm getting a lot of texts. I'm getting a lot of messages about the conversation itself. It's well long overdue. And we have had many different conversations here, Professor, that actually touches on subject matters germane to Jamaicans and Caribbean nationals. And we will continue to do so. We don't get paid for it. But the love of people, the love of country, and the love of humanity pushes us in this direction to do so. My very special guest this morning, former Vice President at the University of Technology, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, and I must commend you and your team for doing the excellent work you're doing.
Yes.
This is the kind of media we need. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of critical approach to the status quo mm-hmm. that matters, that yeah. ultimately can take us to a different place. Thank you so much for the work you continue to do, and I'll be more than happy to be on your program again.
Thank you so much for your compliments, Professor, and thank you again for your valuable time. It is very important we have these conversations. Anthony, thank you for being a part of this conversation.
Yeah, man, and thanks, Professor, and send some of that warm Jamaican sunshine every day.
Take care.
I'm blowing it.
Okay. Thank you guys very much. We'll talk soon. Right. Take care. One love.
All the best.